You're listening to IdgetCast, Season 1, Episode 11, Scarecrow. After a disagreement about their father, Sam runs away, leaving Dean behind to investigate a seemingly picturesque town in Indiana, where at least three couples have disappeared in an apple orchard guarded by a creepy-looking scarecrow.
Welcome back to the IdgetCast. I am one of the newbies, Paul Mackey, and I'm here with my lovely wife, Darcy.
Hello.
And elsewhere, through the magic of the internet, we have David Bushman.
Hello.
And John Pavlich, our expert.
Greetings.
And we have Yvette.
Hey, y'all.
And today we have our special guest, Carol, from the McKinley cast.
Yay.
Hello there. Hello. McKinley cast, Freaks and Geeks intro cast.
Yes, yes. Important to clarify.
Yes.
And you guys are making your way along. How many episodes have you released at this point? It's eight, I think?
Ten
have released. Ten. Okay.
Yeah, I believe it's 10. We're headed for number 11. It's taking us a long time, but we are determined to get there. We will not be fading away.
All right. And have you been watching Supernatural since the early days, or did you catch up to it later on?
I caught up to it later on. I remembered when it came on, I was aware of it, but unfortunately, I'm not a big horror person, So I come at these things a little differently anyway, but I was a big Buffy fan, and a lot of the Buffy fandom was not overly thrilled about Supernatural, so I kind of, in that it was horror and people that I respected weren't that into it at the time, a lot of them came around later and became big Supernatural fans, but I didn't know that, so I really did not pay much attention to it until a good friend of mine who is into horror and that kind of thing kind of roundabout kept trying to, she got my son into it, and then he and she were both trying to get me to watch it, and I watched an episode and said, huh, I don't get it. And I, what is this guy Dean? I don't know about this guy. And then I watched the pilot and I was like, oh, now I get it. And I started watching the whole thing, and I became quite the fan pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's that random episode issue that a lot of people mistakenly try to do. It's like they pick an episode which they love, but they don't think long term in the sense of, like, you know, we may love Once More with Feeling, but if you show that to someone, like, there's a lot of context and backstory that is needed to really fully appreciate that outside of the fact that it's a musical episode, you know?
Yeah, you can't just keep poking someone and saying, oh, and that's significant because of this that happened in the previous episode or three episodes back. And There's a big reveal coming up that was already revealed once before, but it's revealed to all the rest of the characters now. And
yeah, I think I just watched a random episode in the season that was currently being shown, which I think was like season 5 or something.
Yeah.
So I was just like totally confused, and my son was saying, no, it's really good, it's really good. And as I say, I watched the pilot, and it gave a really good picture of who these guys were just in that pilot, and that set it up. And I started watching, it was weird, I started watching DVDs from the beginning, but I still kept watching like season 5 at the same time, so it was weird.
I had that hybrid viewing experience with Buffy, but I suppose we'll move on to our actual episode that we have here.
Yes.
All right. Is everyone ready for the? Yeah, we don't have to hit the bell. It's available. We didn't use it the last episode.
We didn't. Proud of us. We must all be tired.
Are we ready to go into the summary of this? The in detail, in depth. Boring into
it,
this
Paul.
Episode. All right.
I'm afraid. Someone hold me.
Oh, you don't have to be afraid to begin.
I'm always here for you, John.
Okay, good. That sounded creepy. I don't know.
Interpret it as you will. So we open on idyllic Burkittsville, Indiana. A young couple is departing from town. They're given a free apple pie, a full tank of gas. They had been lost, but now they have directions back to the interstate.
As soon as you see that apple pie, you know something's up.
Oh, it's just like Twin Peaks.
Yes. There are excellent pies in this town.
Damn good pie.
Damn good pie.
Nobody gave them damn good coffee, though.
No.
No.
Yeah, Dean had a hard time getting damn good coffee, but we'll get to that.
Yeah, I don't think he ever did get his coffee.
Yeah, the younger girl in this family from town, Emily, notes the guy's distinctive cool tattoo. But they move on, and just outside of town, their car dies, as does their cell phone. They decide to cross the orchard to a nearby house, but on their way, they pass a creepy-looking scarecrow. And while the couple passes, the girl notices that it seems to turn its head. And it's time to just move on, and she must have been imagining that. They move on, and they hear someone behind them, and this is the time when they decide to run. And while running, she loses track of the boy, Vince, and runs the other way, and she ends up tripping over Vince's bloodied, mutilated corpse. And that's the end of the cold open.
So I just have to read y'all my note for this because it's like so stupid. Like my grammar just went out the window. Here it is. Okay. Scared up. Scarecrow done. Come to life, y'all.
That's perfect.
That's great.
That's a better summary than what I opened with. Should have just gone to that.
You were listening to the IgiCast episode Scarecrow. Scarecrow done come to life, yo.
Exactly.
Perfect. Just as in the last, as in the end of the last episode, Sam answers Dean's phone, but this time we get both ends of this conversation. It is indeed their dad. He assures Sam that he is okay and asks to their condition. He says he can't say where he is, and at this point, Dean wakes up and is asking for the phone. Sam gets the dad to say that he is after the thing that killed their mom, and he defines it as a demon. And he says that he also knows about what happened to Jessica. Dad says that he is closing in on it, but the boys cannot help. In fact, they need to stop searching for him. And meanwhile, he wants to dictate some names, but Sam can't accept this. Dad is insisting. He says that he gave him an order. Stop following and do your jobs.
I want to say they're building up a lot of pressure on whatever the explanation is for him not surfacing and allowing them to know where he is. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot. That's going to be a hard thing to deliver on. You know that they're not just drawing it out for the sake of keeping you waiting. Because I want to know why they can't see him.
I have a theory. Am I allowed to have a theory?
Yeah, of course you can have theories.
Okay. Yeah.
I have a theory section at the end, but...
Okay, well, I kind of have a theory on that, and that they, it must, like, feed on the family's love for each other. Like, if you love someone, that demon is going to eat them. So,
well,
no loving.
You know, no loving.
But, so he's trying to protect them, but meanwhile he's sending them off on one dangerous mission after another. So not exactly keeping them
but
out of harm's way.
But that's also the family business, clearly. So,
well, you know, so are you, Darcy, are you sending your kids into the family business as if it's like, hunting demons?
Or
are
I don't
you trying
know.
To keep them out
I got invited
them out of
to
that?
Be in the mortuary business. I chose not to, but...
There's that.
So there's that. So...
And I have seen you give our children sharp needles on occasion.
I give them scissors and sharp needles all the time.
Oh, my gosh.
But, if it's the family business and that's the way of life and that's the only way of life you know, maybe.
And, I mean, it's also, if it is the family business, he's sending them on, they're dangerous but apparently lesser missions than this big demon. John's spending all his time focusing on the big demon, and suddenly all the things that he would have been doing are going to his sons instead because he can't focus on all these other things and the big demon.
And maybe if he keeps them moving, it's harder to hit a moving target.
Could be. But I like your idea of being too close or too loved. Like he knows the boys are going to be at each other.
Yeah, there's always that sibling rivalry that never goes away.
So it's not going to be like they're going to be too lovey to each other.
Right.
Too much.
Well, they get a little bit, but, you know.
Here and there. They get mushy.
Yeah. Like,
bro mushy.
Bro.
I noticed John's real quiet.
He's drinking something.
Oh, that John. Well, I was thinking John Winchester. Yeah. No.
I'm just wondering if John knows something about this. I'm sure he does. But
I'm sure. Well,
anyway.
I mean, anybody who's watched the show knows all about it.
Okay.
But what you guys are saying is really interesting. So you should continue, you know, exploring these veins.
Okay. I'd
like to have a dialogue on these things.
Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff.
Dean takes over the phone, snaps to it, writes down the names. And in the car, Dean reveals that they are couples, three of them, all having traveled cross-country. All of them came up missing, all went through the same part of Indiana, always the second week of April each year, and now is the second week of April.
April.
And I want to pause just for a second and say that this is the 11th episode and we're in the second week of April. This show must have been a little bit offset on its release schedule.
Maybe.
I guess.
But it also had a really...
still have 11 episodes left at the end of April, maybe
before
that's...
Before they said that, I kind of was like, oh, maybe this is like the Halloween episode. I don't know. But
yeah, it looks like a Halloween episode.
I know, because I was thinking fall, because there's like this harvest going on.
Apple harvest?
In the cold open... I know. I'm like, why are there apples... When they said April, I'm like, why are there...
Yeah, why are they harvesting apples in Indiana in April?
Yeah, everything does point to the fall, and I've sometimes wondered if it was like at the last minute after the script was written, whether they changed, you know, the couple lines that had to do with the fall and changed them to April or something because of scheduling.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I guess, you know, there are elements in this episode that make me wonder about that. I guess you're right. I mean, because if they decided that this... skipping ahead slightly, this Meg character was better put off till later into the season. Like they originally had it for a earlier episode, and they were like, "Well, we can't really introduce her now. We need to introduce her later."
Right.
Well, there's also the thing to consider in this episode about this, you know, pagan god and the idea that it's like, oh, they can have all these like glorious apples in April.
Oh.
Because they sacrificed to this
mystical apples. Mystical apples being harvested.
Yeah, that's a real good point. That's a real good point.
Yeah,
no, I think it would have been more fun then if they would have noted, you know, like, wow, there's all these apples on the tree. And it's only April.
Yeah, but that's
right.
It's a little weird,
that
you know.
Was me that
taking a few seconds
that.
Of the dialogue.
Yeah, I suppose. Maybe it's just better as a little Easter egg that we find just now.
Mm-hmm.
The second week of April.
What's this wee crap you're talking about? I found it.
We can call it an Easter egg in the second week of April, right? That's about right.
Okay.
Sorry.
I'm going to tangent bell you.
No, you're not. Sam and Dean go to Indiana. Sam and Dean are to go to Indiana, but Sam pulls over and says they should go to Sacramento, the point of origin of Dad's phone call. Dean reiterates that they have their orders, and Sam insists they should go back to Cali. Dean says, I don't think so.
God, Paul, do you have to do that every time?
I have to do that a lot, yes. That's my personality.
Oh, dear God.
Sam says that, well, Mom died when Dean was 4, Jessica is only 6 months gone, and Sam wants revenge. Sam winds up going outside of the car, packing up his stuff, and he sets off on his own. And Dean says, I'm going to drive away. And Sam says, you better drive away. So he drives away.
I'll pack your bag for you.
Almost. Dean arrives alone in Burkittsville. He debates calling Sam. He holds the phone in his hand, but he doesn't push the button. Outside of Scotty's Cafe, Dean finds Scotty and tries to claim his name as John Bonham and is directly called on the Zeppelin connection to the name, but, you know, lets it go. Dean presents Scotty with the missing posters, and Scotty says he's never seen this couple. Dean senses that he's getting nowhere, and he moves on. And meanwhile, on the road... Sam meets a blonde on the roadside, zoned out on her earbuds, and accidentally sneaks up on her. She refuses.
Another blonde lady.
Mm-hmm. Another blonde.
Mm-hmm. And she refuses to say.
Has short hair.
Yeah, she's got the
pixie
the
cut.
Different cut. Yes.
Yeah, she's got a different haircut, and she is hitchhiking in chunky heeled boots. Seems comfortable.
Swell.
Did anybody's alarms go off when he ran across this girl just sitting on the side of the road?
No.
Not until in retrospect. Like, I mean, once I saw the whole episode, it
and I was like, oh yeah.
She, I mean, obviously
kind of appeared, but
and then I thought, go ahead.
Paul.
And you know, once I saw the end of the episode, I was like, well, wasn't there like a sound of thunder when she suddenly appeared? I mean, they didn't show her like suddenly popping into view, but that was interesting. There was a sound of thunder in the background, and then suddenly she was there. Hmm.
I'll say the women, if I'm remembering correctly, the women in this show have generally not been threatening. They've been kind of the victim.
Yep, absolutely.
I think.
Typically.
Yeah, so far.
I'm so into this girl. I love her. I'm excited. Yes. We see her all the time.
This is Nikki Acox, who starred in Jeepers Creepers 2, where in the beginning of that film, the monster pretended to be a scarecrow.
That's what I thought, yeah.
But I also have 6 degrees with Joss Whedon for this actress.
Oh, awesome.
She's in Jeepers Creepers 2, mm-hmm. which also stars Ray Wise.
Ray Wise, yeah, I knew that.
Who was in Dollhouse.
Oh, that's right. I forgot he was in Dollhouse.
Mm-hmm. Season 2.
Man, now I want to watch Jeepers Creepers and Jeepers Creepers 2.
They're great, yeah.
I love that stuff.
How did you guys feel about the boys separating just like in the middle of the night with Sam walking off, you know, just in the middle of nowhere?
It kind of felt appropriate for them. A typical pair of brothers leaving each other, maybe not, but for them it felt appropriate.
Yeah, I felt this was a long time coming for them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of, every time I see that, it's like, logically, I say, oh, shouldn't he be saying, you know, drop me off at the next bus stop? And then I'm like, no, because these guys are, it kind of points up that these guys are used to just being able to be dropped anywhere and survive it. And
yeah. Plus, yeah, if you're mad enough, you're just gonna want to part company as soon as possible.
Yeah, exactly. And Sam, as I say, it kind of points up because he was introduced as this college guy, but all the episodes, it's just casually taken that no, there's a lot more to him, and he's very comfortable just taking care of himself and not worrying about anything.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think he's been more on his own than Dean because he basically rejected the family, and so I think he's used to being on his own.
Yep.
Yeah, Dean is usually with their dad, so.
Yes. So this girl who's not named yet, so she's going to refuse to tell him where she's going because he could be a big old freak. But she gets right in with some guy driving a van.
Who doesn't want to take the guy, just the girl.
Just the girl.
It's real creepy guy.
Mm-hmm.
And it was earlier than that there was the girl that was going around killing guys that she was hitchhiking with, right? Was that in the 90s?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah,
neither do I.
It was not me.
Okay. there was a female serial killer who was known to be she would pose as a hitchhiker and then kill guys.
Huh. I didn't hear anything about this.
Are they talking about the one that was in that, like, Charlize Theron played her in the movie?
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay. What's her
Eileen
name?
Eileen Wuornov or something like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. So that was earlier than this.
I didn't know that's what she did. Okay.
It was part of what she did. I don't know if she did that all. That was the only thing she did.
Right.
Maybe she did other things too.
I think she was
a prostitute, and she would like kill her Johns.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I believe she also did some hitching.
I think you're right. I think she did do that.
All right. Where the hell am I?
You are right here.
Right here, right now.
There ain't no other place
got into
I'd rather be.
Oh yeah, she got into the van. At the gas station / general store, Dean is trying the missing posters again. The man that was in the cold open says he never saw that couple, but the younger girl again, Emily, remembers the tattoo. And he has to admit remembering him. He claims they were in for just like 10 minutes or so. They were barely in town, so how could you remember? Dean asks for the same directions that they got, and as he drives, the EMF starts to go nuts in his bag. So Dean goes for a walk in the orchard. He takes note of this creepy scarecrow and then climbs a ladder for a closer look. And Dean sees that a section of the quote, leather making the Scarecrow's arm matches Vince's tattoo.
Can I just say I love the design of this Scarecrow?
Yeah.
He is a good design, you're right.
He's awesome.
Yeah, he definitely has, like, horror movie Scarecrow looks, and I like
that.
Mm-hmm. I have to be honest, I only ever saw, like, little bits and pieces of Jeepers Creepers, but I, yeah, totally was like, hey, look! Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, apparently if the bad guy only posed right at the beginning of the second movie, you've seen only clips or bits. Mm-hmm.
Character-wise, I always enjoy the way that Dean is so casual about really examining. He went right to the face and was really examining that face, like, see what was going on, and had it all pretty much figured out as soon as he saw that tattoo. And I just like how he's casual about the whole thing.
Yeah, he didn't like suddenly. It wasn't and the show was even casual about it. It wasn't like a gigantic music sting, like, oh my god, shocking moment. It was more like a, oh, check that out.
I guess I have a clue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a kind of a first for the show, because we get to see Dean operating as a free agent.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's true. That's
yes.
True.
Yeah, yeah, I liked separating the brothers out for this episode. I thought it worked really well.
Hey, you and me both. And most of the time, I'm the only one who likes to see them separated.
I don't know.
We'll get a glad we're in this together.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that if you have to deal with children arguing, you'd feel the same way. Yeah, totally.
Yes. Well, I'm sure at some point later on in the series we'll have an episode or two where it's like, well, he was barely in that episode, and that's because he was off shooting something or something like that.
Maybe
that happens on a lot of things.
Well, I like them being separated every now and then, because even if it's just, you know, for a short time, because I just feel like you get more of the character of each one of them, mm-hmm, separate, because we've been getting a lot of the characters, how they affect each other when they're together.
Yeah, either
how people are different.
Yeah, either how they're playing off each other or how they're acting around each other.
Yeah, and people are different when they're with someone else rather than when they're with family.
Plus, you get to see them as hunters, but not, mm-hmm, being able to rely on the other person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So Dean goes back into town and has Emily fill up the car and gets a conversation with her about whether she grew up there, but she actually came to town when she was 13 after losing her parents to a car accident. And she notes that all of the neighboring towns are losing their homes, losing their jobs, but Burkittsville seems blessed. He does mention the creepy scarecrow, and she says, yep, sure is creepy, but she doesn't know whose it is, that it's just always been there. And then Dean points to a broke-down car at the garage there and asks, finds out that it belongs to a young couple. Meanwhile, Sam finds out that he has to wait a full day for his bus to Sacramento. He debates on calling Dean, just like mirror to that other scene, and doesn't push the button. And then he runs into the blonde again.
This is when my alarms on her started going off. I was like, oh, this is weird that she would just magically be here, you know? Like, I was like, something's going on. Like, either she's following them. It never occurred to me that there was something mystical going on, but I thought maybe she was, like, on their trail somehow.
Yeah, I thought maybe she was at least I thought she was at least targeting Sam, or maybe Sam was going to have his own subplot with her that was not fully related to the mythology at that point. She says she had to leave the van guy because he was grabby, and Sam frets over not getting to California as fast as he wants to. But she says she's also going there and introduces herself as Meg.
Shut up, Meg.
At the cafe, Scotty is awfully friendly to the couple, offering them some pie, apple pie, on the house. And he does turn noticeably colder as Dean enters, ordering a black coffee and some pie. While Scotty is in the back, Dean tries chatting up the road-tripping couple. Scotty tries to block this and still hasn't given Dean his coffee. The couple says they stopped for gas, and the guy at the station noticed they had a leaking brake line. And it'll be fixed, you know, right around sundown.
Right around.
More or less.
Yeah.
Dean says that he could fix it sooner, for free, but they decline. They really just want a mechanic to take care of this. That sounds sensible.
That does sound sensible.
Yeah, I would say the same thing.
Sure.
And then Dean, you know, lays it on a little thicker, presses a little more, saying the roads are less safe at night. And then he finally stops beating around the bush and just says, you might be in danger. And the guy kind of brushes him off at this point, and Dean expresses that he wishes that Sam was there. And at this point, the sheriff arrives, and he escorts Dean out of town. Runs him right out of town.
Mm-hmm. Don't like strangers. Now, I have to be honest, at this point, because you and I really hadn't talked about this episode.
No, we haven't.
I was thinking, okay, so I've seen this one, or I haven't, but there were so many elements of this in other places that I actually wasn't sure.
Because you had seen that early part of Jeepers Creepers, like John mentioned.
I had seen that, and then there was another, I was totally getting Twin Peaks vibes off of it. There's another show that I was getting vibes from. I'm like, this is just like, but maybe that wasn't, maybe I'm, so I was honestly confused.
Well, I mean, the weird small town that sacrifices people is kind of, you can go all over the place with that. You can go Children of the Corn with that. You can go...
Yeah, I got that vibe. Yeah, you're right. And then they had the little scythe. Yeah.
Some folks call it a sling blade.
I'm a total sucker for the, like, small town has, like, creepy stuff going on, sacrifices people.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I don't care what it's in. I love it. Mm-hmm. I love it.
I mean, it comes up more than once in X-Files. It's I know it came up in Smallville once or twice. There's all sorts of
It happens. And I was unsure for a little bit if I had ever seen
this episode somehow accidentally.
So yeah.
Well, David, do you remember seeing this episode?
I think I did see this episode once a long time ago. Yeah.
Yeah, you did.
How do you know that?
Because in an earlier podcast, you mentioned that you thought you might have been the moderator for the 2006 Paley Fest Supernatural panel.
And
you
were,
because I went back and I researched it. And this is the episode that was being shown that night.
No kidding. Wow.
And you make a comment after the episode that all you could think of when you watched it was, Dean, why are you taking advice from the smoking man?
Yes. Yes. I thought that was him, but I wasn't sure.
That's so William funny. B. Davis. I have no recollection of that at all, but...
Yeah.
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 It was pretty funny because I read through the transcript of the thing real fast before we recorded tonight. And... And there were some stories about bugs having to do with the director that directed this episode as well.
Well, but, Kim Manners directed this, right?
Yes, Kim Manners directed this. If you're going to do a 6 degrees of Joss Whedon...
It's a short one.
Yeah, a real short one to Kelly Manners, who was a producer on Buffy. But yeah, Kim Manners was the director for both of them.
Bless you.
And, yeah.
Yeah, I recall him being like really terrific on that panel and just really nice and really smart. And it was really sad when he passed away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Jensen Ackles was telling a story about Kim Manners that he tells a lot, saying that on Bugs, which we all loved so much, they had something like 65,000 bees for that last scene. They had real honest-to-goodness bees, and that Kim Manners won Jensen Ackles and everyone's respect that day because the whole crew was in, like, beekeeping stuff, and the actors had to be just in their regular clothes. And Kim Manners walked onto the set in shorts and a T-shirt and sat down in a box with them in this cloud of bees and directed them. Just that way. So he was going through whatever they were going through.
Yeah, I think
that's great.
I think the story goes actually with the X-Files episode that we name checked, the War of the Coprophages, that he was the director on that as well, I think.
Huh.
And that he was getting chummy with the cockroaches.
I wouldn't be surprised. I know he did a lot of the X-Files.
Yeah, I'm not positive on that. Whoever directed that episode got chummy with the cockroaches. I want to say it's
probably him, if it wasn't Kim Manners, then it would be Rob Bowman.
Yeah.
I'd go and check, but my Skype does weird things if I
Yes, no need. We're actually almost on a tangent here. I'll go ahead and ring it.
Yeah, coming back to the episode proper, one of my favorite things about that moment where, you know, Dean gets run out of town is as soon as the, you know, the car pulls away, he turns around and starts walking back into town.
Yes.
Okay, Kim Manners was indeed the director. There you go.
All right. Yay. Very good. So Sam and Meg are bonding as travelers over beers. It turns out they both want to get away from overbearing families. It seems to be the common theme between the two of them. And Dean drives back into town. The couple are lost in the orchard, and the Scarecrow is stalking them with his scythe. And Dean intervenes with his shotgun and saves them. And then after the commercial, obvious commercial break, it's clear Dean has called Sam the next morning to talk about it. Dean has decided that it is a pagan god based on the annual killing cycle, that it's always a couple, one man, one woman, and that they're always fed a big last meal.
I was so excited because that means I feel like there was an earlier episode that mentioned, like, you know, like the Judeo-Christian god, and I was like, well, I hope this means that we're going to get all sorts of gods.
Yeah.
And I am so excited that we have gods.
Yeah,
it makes it so much better.
I remember when we talked about it, I was like, well, so is this going to be like a, are they going to, the, you know, maybe go with the Neil Gaiman model with American gods where all of the various gods are real in one way or another and that they all, you know, can coexist together in one area. And it sounds like potentially could be true. The sacrifice means health, good crops, prosperity, and Dean is going to a community college to get some research done. Dean won't go so far as to ask for help from Sam, but he does apologize and say that Sam does. He says Sam's got to do what Sam's got to do. Don't plan the plan if you can't follow. Okay.
Yes. Oh God.
I couldn't help it.
What to do with Paul?
It's like an OCD thing with you. You just can't.
I can't
like
help it.
If someone stopped you from doing that, you'd be sitting there like twitching. Yeah. And just like.
You got it.
I've lived with it for 20 years. I know this.
Dean says that it's an admirable trait and that he is proud of him. And as Sam's talking, Meg comes over and asks what his brother was saying, and Sam was saying that his brother was saying goodbye.
That's my quote, Paul.
Oh. I thought I kind of paraphrased that, but okay.
Okay.
I think she said, what'd he say? And Sam said he said goodbye.
Okay. quote stealing.
It's perfectly fine.
Dean meets with the professor. While he seemed kindly enough, I had a hard time trusting him for some reason.
Why? Wow.
I couldn't quite tell you.
I was so excited. I was like jumping in my seat. I was like, yes, yes, yes.
Well, I do have a bad thing about, since I know people's names really well, I don't cover up the lower third at the beginning like I probably ought, like you folks did many times on Veronica Mars. So I did notice William B. Davis' name at the beginning, and I was like, oh, this will be cool.
Oh,
like,
yeah. I know.
I'm on edge and suspicious because he's not joking.
Yes.
So now I'm really hoping for Krycek is my...
Yes, I'll need to remember to cover up the bottom so I don't see Nicholas Lee.
See, I don't have to worry about that because I don't remember any.
You don't know what his name, yeah. That helps. Like I said before we started this, I've received over the years many, many casting spoilers that I've just tried to let roll off of me because it's not really important for the most part, as far as I know.
Now I'm curious. I want to find out whether all these people that you want to know whether they're on there are actually on there because I have no idea who they are.
So the professor says there isn't much pagan worship in Indiana. Dean presses him, saying it could have come in with the immigrants, asks specifically about Burkittsville, and the professor says they were primarily Scandinavians, and that there are hundreds of Norse gods. But Dean wants to find an orchard god. And they do go and look at a text, and Dean finds it pretty quickly. It's the second or third page they get to, the Vanir. Norse gods are protection and prosperity. Or Vanir, I don't know.
The village, some of the villages erected effigies of the Vanir, and some sacrificed humans. One man, one woman. The power centers on a sacred tree. And Dean asks whether burning the tree would kill the god, and the professor scoffs at him and points out they're talking about legends here. And as Dean is departing, he gets the sheriff's rifle butt to the face, knocking him out. I knew I didn't trust this guy.
Yeah. He didn't knock him out.
No, he didn't do the knocking out, but he called him.
I kept expecting Dean's nose to be broken or something. Mm. That rifle butt seemed like it went right in the middle of his face.
Yes. So
butt face.
And then when we get into the next scene, Scotty is appealing to Harley, the gas station manager, about the sacrifice, and Harley says that when they guide the couples and ignore their screams, he can cope with it, but this is more like murder. And his wife points out that the Vanir is already angry. The crops are already starting to die, and this is their last chance of the cycle. The seventh day of the cycle. It becomes clear that they are going to sacrifice Dean and Emily and have them locked into a storm cellar. And meanwhile, out elsewhere, Meg is ready to board the bus, but Sam is going to head to Indiana. He's been unable to reach Dean several times. She tries to insist he should go to California, but he won't. Emily's having a hard time coming to grips with this and says that she didn't know anything about any of this.
I think that's kind of an understatement, Paul. She's having a hard time coming to grips with it. I think she's kind of mortified, but...
Well, the thing that gets me is that, you know, you get to a point where, like, okay, now you're killing one of your own children.
But she's not. She's her parents died in a car accident. And
I know, but
maybe her parents were sacrificed several years ago.
That's what I'm trying to say.
That's probably what it was. Yeah, I forgot about that. Never mind.
Nice.
That's a really good point, right? Like a couple.
Yeah.
A couple.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah. One man, one woman.
And they just kept the baby. God, I love it. All right. Good
but
job.
But they never go into that, right?
No, they don't.
They don't really have it. I mean, it's not important.
Nah, it's kind of a great thought, though.
Yeah, she was 13, though. She wasn't a baby.
Yeah, she wasn't an infant, so.
Well, I guess not, then.
She knew her parents, but still, if she was told that they died in a car accident when she wasn't around.
Right.
Yeah. Why would she question that? Yeah.
Yeah. And if they just happened to be visiting her aunt and uncle at the time.
Right.
They could have definitely been sacrificed right around the area, and she would be told they were in a car accident.
Mm-hmm.
It's a thought.
It's a thought. It could happen. Could have happened.
Yeah.
It is totally a part of my mind canon. I love it.
There you go. Mind canon.
I want a mind canon.
So Dean asks her, says that they can win if they destroy the tree, and asks if there is a special one. Emily does say that there is a first tree that was brought by the immigrants somewhere in the orchard, but she doesn't know where.
It's an angry molesting tree.
And they get tied out into the orchard. They get tied out in the orchard. Dean tries talking sense into the sheriff, who, you know, says, "I don't kill him." Hopefully, that wasn't someone's quote, because it's pretty much what he says. Dean points out the inevitable cover-ups that he has been doing in the meantime, and Emily tries to appeal to her uncle Harley and Aunt Stacy. Stacy says, you know, rather sensibly and level-headed, that it's their responsibility to the town. Emily says that she's family, and Stacy says it's the nature of sacrifice to sacrifice your family, something that you love. And the townsfolk then leave them alone. Dean claims to be working on a plan. But then after nightfall, she mentions it to him, and he says he's working on a plan. He asks Emily if she could see the scarecrow, and there's footsteps approaching. Oh, my God. But it's Sam.
Hey.
Yay. Sam got there by stealing a car. Dean heartily approves.
Of course.
Dean says to keep an eye on that scarecrow over there. Sam says, what scarecrow? So, okay. They work on running away. But the townsfolk are waiting for them at the edge of the orchard to drive them back. It looks pretty bleak, but as Harley is saying it'll be over quickly, he gets a side through the chest. The scarecrow Vanir takes Harley and Stacy as its sacrifice. The next day, Emily and the boys find and burn the first tree. Emily does it herself. Dean points out the whole town will die, and she simply says, anybody's quote?
No quote.
She simply says, good.
Good.
Good. They see her off on the bus, and Sam says that he'll be sticking with Dean. Whatever needs to happen, they should be doing it together. Well, that seems like the end of the episode.
Except,
you know, Sam says he'd save Dean's ass, and Dean insists he had a plan. They get in the car. There's strains of bad company. It must be the end of the episode.
Right.
But the bad...
Yeah, that's if you're watching the the DVD.
Yes, if you're watching the DVD, you get strains of bad company. But the bad company appears to be Meg hitching a ride in a van. She suggests that they pull over. The guy's eager for that. She pulls out an ornate bowl.
Because everybody has one of those in their purse.
Of course. She says she has to make a call. Then she shanks him in the throat, collects his blood in the bowl.
And dials.
Thanks him for the ride. Yes, it dials rotary. It's apparently a rotary blood.
Operator, could you connect me to hell, please?
No touch tone blood in that bowl. It's rotary blood. She divines, speaking some arcane verse.
The Roman charges must be extreme.
Yes. She says to the bull that she could have stopped Sam or taken them both. And then she says, yes, father.
And we go so good. So good.
Very good.
I was excited. Yep. I was like, yay!
It's my favorite part of the episode.
Finally. So finally we're going somewhere with this.
Yes, this episode, while it seemed like Monster of the Week, definitely had a lot of arc in it, after all.
Mm-hmm.
So that's awesome. Do we want to go? Does anybody have anything they want to say about it before we go into who won?
Iris stole my notes.
Iris stole your notes?
Yeah.
Do you know who won? Sam versus Dean?
You know, I'm gonna give it to Sam because he brought in a very interesting character somehow. But that's the only reason. He still needs a haircut.
He didn't do that. The writers did.
Oh, come on. Boy.
You know what, Darcy, I'm going to agree with you. He still needs a haircut, and I don't like looking at his face, but he, you know.
This is kind of a miracle that Yvette is voting for Sam, isn't it?
It is.
She has to overlook the hair.
It's hard. It is hard. That hair is bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went with, I mean, Dean did some good work, but in the end, he was going to be completely screwed without Sam showing up. So I'm going to give it to Sam for a win.
Yeah, I give it to Sam.
Yeah, I give it to Sam because he, by leaving her, he lived. So I think he won in that way. Still alive.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Dean.
Oh.
Right.
And the reason I'm going to go with Dean is because Dean got what he wanted. All at the end, everything was pretty much the way Dean wanted it to be.
Mm-hmm.
Sam had left.
Sam tried to break away, but then he came back.
He came back on his own.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't, for once, it wasn't Dean trying to make him come back. Came back on his own. He's decided to stay on his own. And so they got the bad guy, and Dean got his brother back.
All right. I like your reasoning, but I'm still going with Sam.
That's fine.
So, Yvette, that one goes for Sam, apparently.
That is Sam's episode.
All right. We can go to our quotes section.
I'm going to go first.
Okay.
Go ahead. Dude, you fug.
You fugly. Yes.
That was a good one.
Scotty, you got a spa that lights up a room. Anybody ever tell you that?
I liked, especially in retrospect after the end of the episode, Meg saying, you're right, that guy was shady. He was all hands. I cut him loose.
Cut him loose?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I like that.
Yeah, cut him loose with this mortal coil.
Emily says, I don't understand. They're going to kill us. Dean says, sacrifice us, which is, I don't know, classier, I guess.
Yeah, I had that one too. I like that one. You know, my brother could give you his big puppy dog look. And you just buy right into it.
I hate the puppy
dog look. That's Dean who says that?
Yeah.
You see,
I wonder how often we're quoting Sam when we... Because clearly Dean gets the best line. I just wonder how often we're quoting Sam when I did it in this episode, but I think it's very rare.
It's very rare, yeah. Yeah, there's... Dean generally gets the quotable lines.
He's quippy.
Mm-hmm.
He's got the quotes, he's got the looks, he's got it all.
Even a good haircut, you know.
Ugh, love him.
Anybody else got? Let's see.
One thing this episode, this show doesn't so far have long elaborate quotes that that require someone to have been paying better attention than me.
Oh, here's one that pulled me right out of the story for a minute. The good of the many outweighs the good of the one.
Yep.
Yeah.
Did anybody else have a problem with that line?
What is, I mean, I've heard of it like before somewhere else, like some other movie or.
Yeah, I mean, it's a.
I mean, it comes up a lot, doesn't
it? If you're looking at utilitarian philosophy, that's basically the way you break down exactly what utilitarian philosophy is.
Okay.
Yeah. But most people know it from Star Trek.
Yes.
Oh, is that what it? Okay.
Star Trek made it very. Yeah.
That's where I knew it from.
Yes.
Okay.
Sorry, I mean, I went brainy, apparently.
Me too. I don't know.
No, I'm sure it was used long before that, but Star Trek really kind of set it in a lot of people's minds.
Which Star Trek are we talking about? The original?
Actually, I believe the movie where Spock is dying is the one that...
Wrath of Khan, yeah.
Okay.
Spoiler alert.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
We haven't seen Wrath of Khan yet.
So what was that, 80?
Was it Wrath of
Khan?
Two? Was it really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Is it Wrath of Khan where he does?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah. Because then they search for Spock in episode three.
Right. Okay, yeah, episode three. I love it.
Hence the title.
Movie three, yeah. Yeah, so that one pulled me out because of the Star Trek reference. But... let's see.
All right. Well, we searching for one more quote, or are we ready to roll on?
Did everybody have a quote?
I'll throw one in.
Okay.
If we're going to do this, we'll do it together. That's a Sam quote, but then Dean says, "Hold me, Sam."
Yeah. All right. This will be our feedback section. And we do have a couple of pieces of feedback. I don't know if anyone else other than me wants to read any of the feedback.
I'll read it if it's...
Yeah, I'll paste up Heidi. You can read Heidi.
Okay, cool. I will. Okay, this is Heidi. Hey, guys. This is the first time we get Sam and Dean on their own. Dean really needs Sam's people skills as part of the team. He just ends up sounding like a creeper. Oh, my God, Heidi, I had that exact same note. I'm glad that Sam comes to save Dean, and the Scarecrow is really creepy. What do you think is up with Meg? I look forward to your thoughts. Until next time, Heidi. Thanks, Heidi.
Thanks, Heidi.
Heidi.
What do you think is up with Meg?
I think she's a demon.
Yeah, I think she is. I think she's a demon half breed. You know, because I mean, the dad is John has definitely said that this is a demon that he's tracking. And if she's directly affiliated with this demon and calls it father, either she's like a you know, Satan worshiper and calls Satan her, you know, her dark lord, her father, or something like that. Other than that, it's probably actually her father, and she's actually, you know, half human, half demon. In my thoughts.
Cool.
I think that I'm going to guess that she's somehow affiliated with the ladies on fire on the ceiling.
Okay.
But I don't know how.
All right.
Like it's part of a book club?
Exactly. Sorry.
The Ladies on Fire book club?
Yeah, sorry about that.
Lady on Fire. Sorry. Was that song? Just me? All right.
You know, the blood part didn't really refer back to the earlier deaths with the fire, so it's a little strange in that regard.
What do you mean? You mean the fact?
Oh, actually, that's not true, right? Because we saw the blood dripping off the. Didn't we see the blood dripping off the ceiling?
Yeah,
remember?
Yeah. It was either dripping from the victim or dripping from the ceiling, and it hits the pillow next to the baby and hits Sam in the face, because you're not going to drip blood on a baby's face.
No.
Right.
Yeah, I think originally they were going to drip blood on the baby's face, and they decided that was not acceptable.
It was just a step too far.
Yeah.
All right, Darcy, you're back. What do you think about Meg? What's up with Meg?
Oh, I mean, she's clearly, she's a demon, or at least plays with them. She could just be a witch. I don't know.
A demon worshiper or a demon?
Yeah.
I think I was going with half demon, like her father.
Oh, okay.
Her father that she's communicating with is the demon, and
well,
she has a human half, so therefore she's
part human, maybe.
You know, possibly yeah. in the eyes of the demons, partly flawed, or possibly you know. A better double agent being half human.
Yeah,
who knows?
That could be the case. She's very interesting. I can't wait to learn more.
All right. Well, I'm going to read the next part of feedback. On Facebook, we had a few pieces of feedback. Alicia says that Scarecrow is so freaky looking. Also, what the hell is wrong with these people? Sacrificing innocent people for good crops or some nonsense? Seriously. Ha ha ha. Overall, it's not a bad episode. I'm glad Sam came back on his own accord. He's in it now. Tab says, ever since this episode, I've said fugly.
Yep.
My son didn't know what that meant.
Really?
Yeah, it was until I told him, and then he was like, but it's such a cute sounding word.
Sure.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
And finally, Dizbeth says, the Scarecrow is super creepy. I don't know how... I don't get how that many people can be okay with sacrificing two people a year. I have to say I agree with Sam about their dad, but it makes Sam look bad that he doesn't want to save those people. But I'm glad that Dean gave him a choice and he came back on his own. So again, thank you, Dizbeth. That's a couple episodes in a row. Thank you for your feedback. So we are on to our rating section, and we'll allow our guest to go first on the rating.
Oh. Okay.
We do a out of 10 with the whimsical rating scale on our podcast.
Okay. Well, I like seeing Sam and Dean apart. I like that Meg was introduced. So I'm going to... I know what's coming, so it's really hard for me to give it a really, really high rating. But I'll go with 7.5 out of 10 fugly scarecrows.
All right.
Nice.
Very good.
I actually watched this one. I was able to sit and watch it. It was compelling. It kept me going. And, you know, it had a lot of references to a lot of different things that I've enjoyed in the past. So I am going to give it... 7 out of 10 fresh April apples.
All right, very good. All right. I think I was going to give it a... I liked it a lot. The trope of the small town conducting the sacrifices, you know, was brand new and fresh for this town, for this show. You know, like I said earlier, I'd seen it, you know, in various places, Smallville, X-Files, among others. And I thought Meg was nicely intriguing, and there's plenty more mythology despite this seeming like just a Monster of the Week show. So I'm going with 8 out of 10 cigarette-smoking professors, or non-cigarette-smoking professors, as the case may be.
Yeah, I really like this episode a lot. It's actually one of my favorites from season 1. It fills the sort of quota of being a Monster of the Week episode. And having mythology.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give this 8 out of 10 slices of apple pie.
Mm, nice. Oh, yummy.
Yay.
Yeah. Some damn yeah. fine pie.
Yes.
Oh, that was another quote. I hope so, frickin' pie is worth it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
In fact, you were going to go.
So I really liked this episode because it had a trope that I really like. I love satanic small towns or just evil small towns. It had the cigarette-smoking man. It had a she-demon. And let's be honest, that scarecrow done come to life, y'all. So I'm going to give it 9 out of 10 cool tattoos. I loved it.
Pandemonium. Crazy as hell.
I also like this a lot, and I thought the show was seeming a little static to me, but this was kind of propulsive in terms of moving it forward. Mm-hmm. And I do agree with what people have said that it was nice to see them apart which was different, and also the whole introduction of Meg, I think, really was a kind of a game changer. So now the thing is, I saw this, I watched this thinking, you know, ahead. It's been a couple of weeks since I saw this, and I there was a scene that visually really appealed to me, which was when they put up some black umbrellas. I don't know if anyone remembers.
Yeah.
So I was giving it 9 black umbrellas.
Oh, cool.
Nice. All right, so that means overall, this episode gets an 8.08 out of 10, respectively.
Nice.
All right. Okay. Well, Carol, thanks for coming on and joining us on this episode.
Thank you so much. I had a great time. I hope I didn't creep you out, David, by...
No, I really appreciated it. I really appreciated it.
That was awesome. Thank you for doing the homework for us there.
Oh, yeah, there
my
you go.
Pleasure.
Would you like to directly plug your podcast?
Absolutely. McKinley Cast, Freaks and Geeks Intro Cast. I'm one of the newbies. We have... 2 experts and 3 newbies on it, and we're going slow, but we're having a great time with it, and I hope everybody will join us.
Yes, I'm coming up one of these episodes close to the end. I'll be on to guest with you guys.
Excellent.
So I look forward to that.
I also should be guesting on Potential Cast in another little while.
All right, awesome.
A few weeks, probably.
I'm not back to Potential Cast until season 7, so.
Same yeah. here.
I get an episode that nobody really likes too much coming up, but
Double Me Palace?
No,
oh.
Not that one. Different one.
Okay. Well, we'll let that go for now.
Yes.
Just in case. All right. John, what's our homework for next week?
Next week's homework is season 1, episode 12, Faith.
Faith.
Yeah.
All right. Predictions...
The return of Eliza Dushku's character.
Yeah,
yeah. We're talking about Faith.
5x5.
I'm really curious to see if Meg is back immediately or whether she's out for a while.
Yeah.
If they're picking up on that right away. Very curious.
Yes,
I think she's such a good character. I can't wait to see her back.
Yeah, I don't know if I have a prediction per se, but yeah, I'm really eager to find out.
Any predictions about Faith?
Yeah, like I said, I'm not really sure if I have a prediction, but I definitely am looking forward to seeing more about Meg, hopefully in the coming episodes, if not the very next. I'm hoping for the very next.
Because X-Files would do that all the time. They'd leave you hanging, and then it'd be 4 episodes before they'd come back to some clue that they dropped about the overall mythology.
Yes, yeah, and they definitely have a lot of common staff, so.
Yeah.
So you never know. I quipped recently to the Intro to X podcast that I was hoping that since John Scheiben's involved that there will be a Chupacabra episode eventually.
Chupacabra. Okay.
All right. So for everyone all across this whole Skype call, I'll say thanks for joining us and happy hunting.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
You have been listening to the IdgitCast from QuadruppleZ.com. Visit our Facebook group at facebook.com/IdgitCast. Email us at IdgitCastPodcast@gmail.com. Please use the episode title in the subject line. You can call our voicemail line, 206-309-9389. Please name the episode early in your message. The theme song for the IdgitCast was written and performed for the show by Borrowed Trouble, and the vocalist is Allie Jones. Find the band at borrowedtrouble.com. The closing music you are hearing right now is Too Good, written and performed by Jack Mangan and is used by permission. Find more music by Jack, as well as humor, fiction, discussion, and a variety of other goings-on at jackmangan.com, home of the Deadpan Podcast. Would you like to hear more from the hosts of the show? You can find John Pavlich on CastleCast, also from QuadripleZ.com, and his own Sofa Dogs podcast at sofadogs.libsyn.com. Yvette can also be heard on Investigating Mars, also at QuadripleZ.com. David Bushman is one of the hosts of the Pop Culture Wars podcast at Facebook.com/PopCultureWars. Get in touch with Darcy for apparel design needs at Facebook.com. Search for Cyan Fey Designs, CYANFEY Designs. And you can also hear Darcy and I on the Ghostlight podcast, an intercast for the television series Slings and Arrows at QuadripleZ.com.